Blog Talk Radio.
Again, baby, for our third show, you've sauntered onto Blisterfish territory. Like I said, we're doing our third show here, Wednesday, 7 p.m. on the button. Looks like we might have this thing down finally. No major catastrophes. Are you there, old DB?
I'm here, man.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, unbelievable. No major catastrophes.
Yeah, maybe I'll try that again next time, too, huh? That worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, back again, third show. We'll see how it goes. I keep thinking, man, that these shows kind of are going to, you know, change as we go along here. You know, they'll develop and stuff, things like that, you know. I think, as we hit through things, we'll see what happens and, you know. How things go along. So, what have you been up to, man? What's been going on?
Nothing much. Just same old, you know. Just hunkered down in the bunker here at the Adams Family Bunker, trying to keep my head down with all this crazy stuff going on here in the country and everything with all the different things going on with the Bundy Ranch possible standoff and
yeah.
You got
out there, man. How come you didn't go out there?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was polishing up the AR-15 and everything, and I was gonna get the whole Adams family in the rig and head out west, but to Nevada, maybe hit some casinos on the way. But I couldn't talk old Morticia into going; she didn't want to go. So
no, she didn't want to stay in the desert somewhere, sleeping in a tent, or standing off the government, huh?
No, that does not. That's not her ideal vacation. she'll be out there with her little.
She's gonna beat the Bahamas any day.
Yeah, I said I bought you a pink 32 Tomcat. You just keep that in your purse. You'll be fine. Yeah, that's some crazy shit out there, dude. I know we made the thing that we weren't gonna. Well, we normally don't listen to a lot of network news or anything and all that and a lot of the cable news, but ever since we started doing the show, I've been watching a lot more of it, and I got into when a lot of the shit went down out there on, I think it was Friday and Saturday and into Sunday, I went against my normal procedure of not watching much news and just kind of hitting around at it for a minute or two, but I sat and watched, I think it was, I don't know, Saturday night I came in, and I think I watched about 5 or 6 hours of it halfway through the night, and just watching all the stuff that was going on and
I didn't watch too much news surrounding. I read more of it on the internet than I did network news. Was it
they weren't
not paying taxes? They so that was really what they were saying it was coming down to.
No, not really. Well, you know, that's part of it. That's the government's angle on it. It's Friday. Remember, I think I talked to you on Friday or Saturday. I couldn't find anything about it on CNN. Fox talked a little bit about it, but MSNBC, none of them were really covering it. None of the network news was really covering it. And then, I don't know, it was something about it on Sunday. It just seemed to explode. I think that's what it was. Maybe it was Sunday. I watched a lot Sunday night. Uh-huh. But it was basically boiled down to this guy's kind of a mid-level rancher. He's not a huge rancher, not small time either, but out in Nevada there, and he was. I guess the people there have been grazing on it. It's a state, I believe it's state owned, but it's publicly used land, and they've been grazing their cattle on there for 150 years. And all of a sudden, this BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, swoops in and says, they change their story every so often. At first, it was they're protecting these desert tortoises. You know, they're trying to protect their habitat or whatever, so they don't want the cattle grazing there no more. Then it was moved on to, you know, they might want to build a solar plant there and just all these different things. And then it ended up being, you know, just basically, you know, that they, from what I could tell, it just seemed like they just wanted to take the land over. And he hadn't been paying. I guess in 93 they had this grazing tax that was, you know, loosely enforced or whatever, and Clive and Bundy, the rancher, hadn't been paying this grazing tax, and they say he owed $1 million in taxes on this tax.
Yeah, that's
so basically, it turned into kind of a standoff, you know, and I guess Hannity was talking about it. I was watching him. I normally can't stand that guy, but I actually kind of agreed with him. He's like, you know, they don't go in and swoop in on murderers and rapists like this. They had like 200 armed agents out there with full body armor and, you know, AR-15s, full automatic weapons. They had armored vehicles. They had all this stuff. They were like ready for a war. And I guess it really still isn't over. I guess they can really go back out there. And now they're saying there's like rumors that they may wait till all these militia guys and everything, all the protesters and stuff that were out there that were armed. It was basically an armed standoff. They stood face-to-face with them. They had them outgunned, basically. And they just basically stood the government down and they left. But that, now they're saying they think they're going to do like a midnight raid and just basically go in and do a kind of a Ruby Ridge or Waco on his family. It's just madness, you know. Yeah, my whole thing is, and this is that Hannity actually made a pretty decent point. And guys, you know, a lot of times you watch him, you just want to punch your TV, but he actually made a decent, I got to give him credit where credit's due, he made a decent point. There's all types of legislative ways and legal ways and judicial ways that they can go about that. They could put liens on his, you know, property. They could do all types of things they can do to him that can affect him, you know, without going in there like an army and basically starting a small war. So, you know, it almost kind of seems like they want to do that, you know, that it's like they just get antsy. They want to go in there and just blow some people away for, you know, when they give him a reason to.
Yeah, but why, though? I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, he's right, too. Hannity's right, and I agree with you 100% there because, you know, I normally don't listen to dude either, but I agree with that point. But the thing is it's got to be about something, and it's not about the fucking tortoises or probably even the cattle. I mean, $1 million is a lot to owe, and a whole lot of other people have lost way more than that owing money to the IRS. You know what I'm saying, or whatever, a governmental agency of some kind. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they only went for this guy's cattle. I guess they confiscated a bunch of his cattle, when really, if he owed that much money to the government, probably legally they could have come in and confiscated his whole damn ranch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, he could have probably lost his. So I don't get it. Something's not ringing true here. I mean, they sent in all these government agencies, you know, all these, you know, of course, I don't know if there's any armored vehicles there, but, you know, hundreds of government, you know, I don't know if you call them troops, but, you know, agents from different parts of the government coming in there, you know, I don't know. I mean, something doesn't make sense with it. You know, why was it such an ordeal? What, there had to have been something behind it. I saw a video where the thing about the, you know, you mentioned like the energy deal. I don't know if this is true, but you know, of course, Harry Reid is like king of Nevada, you know, the Democratic senator, and his son. And this was the good point in this article that I read about, or in the video, and I guess is, you know, they said, in America, it's not illegal to bribe all of the politicians' relatives. You can't give money to Harry Reid, but you can hire every single one of his relatives for big money doing something, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what has happened with his son. He works for some sort of Chinese energy company, and they apparently either are wanting to build a project or are trying to buy rights to this land for like a solar energy project. So I think it's something bigger than – I think it's like that, you know. It was something odd that they would send out federal agents to confront a bunch of ranchers and militia people over $1 million worth of back taxes.
Yeah.
Something funky doesn't add up, you know?
Well, I think that kind of the opposite, well, their side of it, the militia and his cohorts and his family, I think they're kind of like at the state sovereignty issue, too. It's like, you know, where's the county sheriff and all this? Where's the state government? You know, if the state owns the land, if it's public, if the state controls and it's public property or whatever, why is the federal government going in? It's the same thing like in the
too. Yeah.
And it's the same thing like a lot of those, you know, like the marijuana stores and the dispensaries and stuff in California. It's legal in the state, but yet the federal agents will go in and kick their door in and screw them all over and give them federal charges.
Right.
So I mean,
I think if it's BLM land out in Nevada that's grazing on, that BLM land is federal. So I think maybe that's where they're saying they get the right to go out there and do something about it. You know.
Well, then they're lying because
I'm kind of like halfway between it, man. I saw you give that long conversation, that thread we had on Facebook about it, and that guy joined on, and he had a totally valid point about, you know, I mean, a lot of this justification was like, you know, we've been out there 150 years or whatever, 130 years on the land. That's all fine and well, but he was saying, you know, well, if that's the case, then the American Indians should own the entire country then, because they've been here the whole time. And I, that hit me as that you know, I was like, yeah, I think he's right. You know, that's the point. Hey, man. So I don't think that he could use that for justification, but there's still something funky going on with it, that the federal government would be involved at the level it is for over a bunch of back taxes. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little different than like Waco. I mean, you know, Waco is just about as vile as it gets. They send a goddamn fire tank in there, and they light incendiary devices right inside the compound with women and children right in the building. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. They're saying reason why nowadays that like today that they didn't actually invade the ranch or do something, you know, to take it over. There's so many people reporting on it right from the site, internet.
I actually think they were a little worried that they were outgunned. I mean, they had that many guys there that were armed.
Well,
I guess.
If that was the case, then they would have called in the National Guard. They would have called it whoever they needed to. You know what I'm saying? The government, the police nowadays, they don't let themselves get overgunned. Boston bombing, dude. You know, I mean, if that wasn't the most outrageous, strong arm of you know, police forces, I couldn't believe that. I was shocked as hell.
Kicking people's doors in and just going through people's houses, no warrants.
Kicking them out, dude, evacuate, kicking them out of their own houses, confiscating guns. There was like 50-some federal and police agencies involved. I thought in Boston was just a systematic takeover of the city. It was almost like an exercise to them. I mean, all of that was for a hunt down for a 19-year-old dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that was crazy, dude.
I mean, they had hundreds of police forces and federal forces, and people are stuck inside their houses. I don't think it had anything to do with the 19-year-old dude. I think he was just justification for them to come through and impose martial law on a portion of the city and see if they could be, successful doing it. And they were.
Yep.
You know?
And then they had them.
Pictures, people are standing in the upstairs of their bedrooms taking pictures of tanks rolling down the street and shit.
Oh,
fucked up.
It was like communist China or something.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Worst of any.
And then they had them surrounded. They had them surrounded in the boat, and instead of bringing them in, you know, God, they had them outgunned hundreds to one. Instead of bringing them in, they gave them one of these. Yeah,
they
gave him a beef. No, they probably gave him the old space ray. Yeah, where's that at? I gotta get a better call.
They did shoot that fucker right in the throat, man. So of course now he can't talk. You know, he can't.
Yeah.
He's the last surviving. I mean, and then I didn't think we were going to talk about this tonight. I want to look into this a little bit more. But then they sent those FBI agents down to Georgia to the kid's friend, the 19-year-old's friend down in Georgia. And on the third visit, they shot the fucker. I think they shot him in the back and in the head and shit. They said he made a lunge for their weapons, and he got shot like 5 or 6 times. And they were all, of course, cleared for that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, man, there's some crazy, funky shit going on with the federal authorities lately. And to me, it just seems like it's like exercises. It's like they're practicing for something right now, you know. And like the Boston bombing was an excuse they were waiting for to go ahead with a live exercise, man, to see if they could cordon off and take over a portion of the city and declare martial law, which is what they did, man. You couldn't come out of your house. They were knocking down doors. They were running through your house with AKs, and, or not AKs, but, you know, M16s and shit.
Here they come.
Right.
Like the SS?
Yeah.
Like the SS?
I mean, that shit was scary, dude. I mean, you have pictures all around. There's, you know, teams of 20, 30, 40, all teams of, either police or military running down the road and shit. I mean, all for a 19-year-old kid. You know, on top of it, we need to you look back in perspective of what they're going after with some kids. Teenagers.
Did you see that just the other night they arrested a couple more guys that had backpacks on that were in the staging area for the Boston Marathon? They blew one of the backpacks off and they arrested the other guy that had a backpack on. And I don't know if they even had anything to do with it.
No, I read about it. You know what it was? Those dudes were performance artists. And he staged that shit. He's going to end up going to jail for years. He staged it for publicity. And he went out and started yelling Boston Strong and shit to, you know, bring attention to himself and left those backpacks there. And apparently the last I read just a little while ago is he was a performance artist famous for doing crazy shit like that.
Huh.
So he's going to be fucking behind bars for about 20 years, man. That'll be quite a performance, man. He just bought himself a fucking front row seat in a 6x6 cage, man. That's got to be about the dumbest thing to do. If that's true, if that's what it ends up being. But that's the last I heard, man. That fucker was like, he was trying to stage some sort of performance out there and freak everybody out.
Ignorant.
Well, yeah, right.
Old DB, looks like we might have a caller here. He's on hold for a few minutes.
Right,
so I'm going to give him his intro, and then we'll bring him on.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Hello, caller. Where do you hail from? What's your name?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Ryan from Hammer the Guts.
All right, Ryan. Awesome.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much. We're just sitting here shooting the shit. Sounds like we got finally somebody from possibly the atheist community, probably. Is that my correct in saying that?
On the page. I saw you guys posted on the page with the link and the phone number. I asked if you minded if I drunk dial you, and nobody responded, so I figured I'd do it anyways.
Yeah, once I get about 15 minutes before the show, I kind of lose track of what's going on with everything else. I got dogs up here fighting upstairs. I'm down in my basement bunker down here, and everything's going crazy. There's nobody in the house, so I'm trying to juggle a bunch of stuff going on. But yeah, I go by the handle Uncle Fester here. You can call me Fester Adams, and it's old DB as my co-host. And what do you want to talk about?
Oh, shit, I don't know. I just saw the number and thought I'd call, really. I only got a few minutes of the show on hold. Other than that, I'm stuck on my phone, so I couldn't quite get it in. But I don't know. Let's see. I went to church recently.
What kind of church?
It's a Presbyterian church. I went because I had a niece and nephew doing sort of a churchy kind of play, sing-song kind of deal, and I wanted to just basically give them some love, kind of do the atheist PR kind of thing. I wore my United Atheists of America shirt, so nobody mistakenly thought I would I was supporting faith or Christianity or anything. Basically, just went there to support them. So that was kind of interesting. Got a bit of a backlash on that.
What's that?
You got a bit of a backlash on that. Yeah.
What did they say to you?
I was accused of supporting childhood indoctrination.
Oh, that's funny coming from the church.
No, they do their own
indoctrination.
It actually came from another atheist on Facebook accused me of that.
Yeah. I could see that. I don't mean to step on you, Dennis. Go ahead, Dennis.
No, go ahead, man. I'm done. Do it up.
Yeah, I was just thinking today I was writing something, and a lot of times, you go to a lot of the atheist pages, and you guys got a great page. Your page is great. That's one of my favorite ones, Hammer the Gods on Facebook, and I'll give you some promo for that. I like that page a lot. But I was just thinking about a lot of we always have the real funny memes and the real scathing memes, making Christians and believers and religions, especially Abrahamic religions, exposing how nuts they are in believing the Bible and how crazy, God looks and how murderous and sadistic he looks and everything, the God of the Old Testament and all the contradictions in the Bible and the Old Testament, New Testament, everything. And I was just like thinking about it, and I was like, there's so much discovery and knowledge now that, we don't even really have to do that anymore. I mean, trying to make them look foolish. I was just reading something today about how all the archaeologists, the major archaeologists, all now agree that basically the Exodus never happened. They have never found,
right.
They haven't found a trace of any of that stuff. I think I posted something on my site. And it's all there to be had if you just want to look at it. That just basically debunks everything about the Bible. And it's even getting to the point now where it's getting, even the existence of Christ and Jesus Christ is being, they're coming up with all types of, information on that he basically never existed. So I don't know if they've totally proven that, but some of the theories are really, pretty solid to me. But, I just don't, to me, making those memes and stuff, I think it's more entertainment for the atheists and for the non-believers than it is really doing anything for the believers. I don't know how much it really, affects them or if they even care. They just think you're going to hell anyways.
Right.
But
well,
I
think it serves several purposes. I think it can grab some believers by kind of smacking them in the face with something that's right up there. People who are doubting might need something like that. People who are just leaving religion kind of need a little reassurance that they're on the right track to reason. But I totally agree with you. Basically, if you're paying at least some degree of attention to reality, what's going on in science and just general understanding of what's going on in the world, any reasonable person, I think, will come to the conclusion that the notion of the existence of any god, whether it be Thor or Zeus or Hanuman or, Jesus, the Abrahamic God, what have you, is, we can't rule it out, I guess you could say, but it's so preposterously unlikely that you pretty much have to be, off your rocker to still believe it. So, there's a purpose in smacking people with a hammer, so to speak. But a lot of it really is just more the promotion of reason and, as I say, sort of evidence-based, critical, empathetic thinking,
Yeah, I think, there's a reason why, they've gone from these massive miracles of, parting the Red Sea and water into wine and whatever else. And nowadays, it's like Jesus and toast. That's like the miracles nowadays. It's like, hey, I can see him in this leaf or something. All these other things, obviously, no one would believe anymore. Or there needs to be proof. And now, there's so many ways to document if something like that happens. they're obviously not happening. You know, I mean, they're parables, they're metaphors, they're whatever else. But that's the reason why, like, miracles, modern miracles right now are, you know, like I said, like Jesus face and toast, man. I mean, it's like, you know, that's the great miracle nowadays, you know, because that's the only thing they can come up with, you know. It's like the great miracles are him showing in the clouds or something, you know, after a volcano or, you know, whatever.
Sure. It seems to me that, you know, this whole notion of miracles comes down to two things, which is childhood religious indoctrination primarily, and then otherwise cognitive biases. I mean, you don't have religious people from one religion looking at the quote-unquote miraculous claims from some other religion and being like, oh, that's totally legit. If that same claim was made from somebody else by another religion, they'd be like, that's total bullshit. And it really comes down to a confirmation bias and you know, all of that, that they want to believe so fervently, they incorporate that into their pre-existing notions.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, and it's environmental also. It's you drag a kid to church, you pray to a God, you know, and you do something over and over and over again, you're going to believe it. I mean, you know, you go to church once, twice a week, you attend one or two church activities, you know, and that starts accumulating. And, you know, I mean, as a kid, man, you do that several times throughout your life. And you, like you said, that's a good word, indoctrination. I mean, it's drilling it into the head. And no matter who you are or what it is, you'll be brainwashed by it if you do it over and over again. You watch TV or you watch TV all the time, you're going to get brainwashed by it. Or if you do the same thing over and over, you'll convince yourself that is the truth of the matter, whether it is or not, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of it is environmental. I mean, these kids are brought up in it. They're taught that this is the way it is and you know, not to question it, you know?
Yeah.
Don't talk about the truth, Dennis.
You want answers? Yeah. I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
That's what it is, guys. Really?
A lot of indoctrination doesn't happen just on the, you know, parents to children level. It absolutely happens on the cultural level. So sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No. Go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to say that's kind of what it all boils down to is we can't handle the truth. I mean, I say we. I'm pretty much a fairly new atheist. I'm probably 4 or 5 years into it. But I mean, I came from a, you know, born again background. I was a Christian for 15 years, water practicing born again. And it's hard to accept the truth that, you know, that there isn't this miraculous afterlife and everything. And you just, even after you become an atheist, it's still nagged at your fear. You have fear of mortality and everything. That's what's so insidious about it. They use that fear, fear of your mortality and of death. They use it against you to, you know, sell that the religion to you and that faith. And it's really sickening. But, you know, I don't blame people for believing it. But I just, you know, I wish somehow, you know, like you said, I don't care. You are right. If we got to do memes, if we got to post 10,000 memes a day, however we got to do it, we got to get out of this. And I think it's slowly but surely. It's picking up speed and steam, but I mean, I think maybe in a couple centuries, a lot of this stuff will be gone, you know, or it'll be a new religion or something different, but, you know, the Abrahamic religions hopefully will be out of here.
Yeah. I think there's a, you know, I mean, obviously it's happening. There's so many empty churches in even like Europe right now. You know, it's funny because the countries with the highest standard of living in just about the whole world, many of them have the highest rates of atheism. All the Norwegian countries, and you got some Norwegian countries where atheism is in the 70-80% range, and they all have very good lives. They live pretty good lives, man, in Norway. I mean, they all, you know, very high standard of living. And it almost seems to correlate. I mean, it seems like, you know, as the society expunges God from their daily processes, they seem to benefit from it, you know, instead of what the Bible teaches is that they, you know, disintegrate into chaos if you don't believe in God, you know.
Isn't that a daisy?
Well, you know, to paraphrase Sam Harris, you know, no peoples or cultures ever suffered from being too reasonable.
Well, you know, and you talk about the moral aspect of it. We were talking last week about a report that just came out in the federal prison system, which there's several hundred thousand people in the federal prison system. The only 0.07% of the entire federal prison system identifies themselves as atheists. So conversely, you got 99.97% of the prison population identifying them themselves as religious. And that in itself proves that the Bible is no moral standard, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the stats are a little fuzzy on that because I don't think the prison system officially keeps stats on the religious preferences of inmates.
Yeah, it wasn't the prison system that gathered it, though. It was an independent... let me see if I can find the article and see who did the gather the information. They actually had someone come in and ask the prisoners the questions of whether they were religious or not and things like that. But I don't think it was the prison system that actually gathered the information.
Yeah, one thing that I would say is pretty obvious about it. You know, people say that Christianity or the Bible, what have you, is the basis for morality. If that were the case, then one would assume, at least, or conclude that the prison system should be almost entirely absent Christians. It would be people of other religions or mostly atheists, and you don't see that being the case. And there have been other studies where they also have talked to different inmates. And these inmates use whether they already were religious before committing their crime and being incarcerated or once they converted in prison to some other religion or became more fervent in their Christianity or what have you, that they then use these either previous or newfound religious beliefs to justify their previous crimes.
Right. Well, they're forgiven now, you know. Once that happens, they're forgiven. They don't have to care about it anymore.
Yep.
You know.
That's right.
But here's this report. I pulled it up. It's on alternet.org, and it was published on the 31st of March of this year. And I stand corrected. It does say the statistic, thanks to a 2013 report released by the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons and obtained by a blogger, Hernet Mehta. Report looks at federally run prisons in the U.S. that makes up 218,000 prisoners, and 0.07% say they have some sort of religious affiliation. Or, I'm sorry, 0.07% have no religious affiliation. So it was gathered by the prison system, according to this report. But, I mean, you know, that, I mean...
All rise as the judge leaves.
That's, I mean, it's just an amazing number, man. I mean, you're only talking 218,000 people, 0.07%. I'm thinking that's probably, you could probably pull that number up quick, but it's only a few people, you know, 218,000.
At the very least, you would think that the proportion of non-believers in prisons would be higher than the proportion of non-believers in society. If atheists were inherently immoral in some way, you would think that the percentage in a prison relative to the rest of the population would be higher than it is just out in society. And what you find is it's exactly opposite, that there are actually proportionally fewer atheists in prison systems than in the general population of society.
Yeah. And that goes along with the whole thing.
1,500 prisoners out of 218,000 identify themselves as atheists. So and I'm willing to bet some of those, I mean, that's just federal prison, but they're probably, like, you know, growing weed or something in their backyard, you know. It's for the. I'm wondering how many of those are in there for nonviolent crimes on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a lot of people. Anybody's in there for that.
Yeah.
But that just kind of goes with the theory, though. I don't know about if prison's the same way as being in a war, but, you know, how they always say there's no atheists in foxholes. Maybe maybe people get in prison and get scared, and they turn to religion. I know a lot of black people seem like they turn Muslim when they get into prison. A lot of men. So I don't know, but they probably consider themselves atheists at the time, I would imagine.
My understanding is there's a lot of coercion in the prison system too to lean toward religion, and once you're in, there's not a whole lot of hobbies. Being religious affords you some special privileges to get out of your cage, and you know, special meals and things like that as well. So
I imagine a lot of people do it for self-preservation, you know, to get along, to get within a group for safety. You know,
right?
It may be dangerous to call yourself an atheist in prison. I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
That may be the case. That may be the case.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, it's hard to say either way. But one thing we do know, like Dennis was saying, a lot of the European and the Norwegian countries and stuff, they have a way lower, you know, their way higher rate of atheism, and they have a way, their crime rate is basically nothing or non-existent for a lot of them countries. So, I mean, that right there is just, you know, you can't prove it through the prison system. You can kind of prove it through those countries. So that's what I always joke about. I want to move to Finland, or I always name some country every time something bad happens in the United States. I'm just like, I want to move to Finland or Switzerland or somewhere, Norway.
I was just reading this guy. I follow this guy. It's on Cryptogon.com, and he does a page there, and he does alternative news and some conspiracy stuff, and you know, because interesting offbeat stuff. But he has been living in New Zealand. He's a U.S. citizen, and he just was expatriated from the U.S. And moved to New Zealand just because he couldn't take it here anymore. He's been living in New Zealand for quite a while. And he gave numbers. I forgot. I should have that for me. But it was a group of people that were becoming New Zealand citizens, and a large portion of them were Americans moving out of the country.
Yeah, I have not confirmed it, but I have heard anecdotally from a good friend on Facebook that Canada has also received some gay people because of religious persecution in the United States. So they're essentially claiming asylum, and Canada has allowed them asylum.
Oh. Yeah, I'm sure that's a good reason.
By Christians.
You're right. I mean, that's the only one beating the shit out of them, out of those people, you know, out of the gay people are, you know, religious right. And Brian and I were talking about that, and we were just saying, you know, a lot of these people that are doing the beating and the hating on gay people, they've got something hidden in themselves that they're almost inherently gay. I mean, they're so vehement.
You certainly seem to be in touch with your anger.
Right. It's inside them, you know, and they got to beat it out of someone else to get it out of them. You know,
yeah,
especially with
like
all these preachers, all these priests that have been found out. You know, they're taking the lead in terms of a gay opposition, and then they end up being gay themselves. You know, the Ted Haggarts and the, you know, I mean, on and on. I mean, they've been exposed so many times.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I don't want to, I don't know if you have any other callers, or I don't want to hijack the show, but I wonder if I could run something by you, read something to you guys that I wrote a couple minutes. When I came on, I was talking about going to church, and it brought up in me this piece that I read wrote. So I'd like to just read it and get your guys' take on it and see what you think on it.
All right.
Titled A Message to My Religious Friends and Family. It goes, I find it rather disturbing when religious people look at me with glee, as if I'm a prospect for religious conversion. It's disconcerting to see people, especially those that I care about, act like predators and treat me like prey. It's also a very devaluing experience. The subtext of such interactions implies that my only value as a human being is that of a potential. Furthermore, these attempts at religious conversion are devaluing for both predator and prey. The value I see in you is independent of your religious beliefs, and acting like some sort of spiritual soldier only serves to tarnish that value with propaganda and a religious agenda. It takes away from your value. It doesn't add to it. Besides, people look funny going to war on plastic high horses. False piety and a pompous sense of certitude are quite unbecoming. If you want to have a frank, honest, and polite discussion about gods and religions, that's fine. I'll be happy to do that. But don't try to convert me, as I will not be seeking to deconvert you. If you want me to see some positive value or truth in your religious beliefs, simply reflect that in your genuine, kind actions and words, for this speaks far more loudly than any coercive measures meant to persuade me into attending your place of worship or some other such thing. However gentle, loving, or well-meaning you believe these measures to be, you will not be able to avoid seeming predatorial. You will not be able to avoid the tarnishing. Try for these moments to ignore your religion and see in me the value I already retain. Just be yourself. Be kind. Be genuine. Be intellectually honest. I am not hollow. My life is not without meaning. I do not have a God-shaped hole in my heart. I am not a sinner in need of salvation. I am your family member. I am your friend. I am an atheist, and I am so much more. Try, if you will, to see your words and actions from my point of view instead of how you think God is viewing your words and actions. If you have difficulty doing that, examine your attempts to convert me or persuade me into attending your place of worship, then imagine someone else who believes in the existence of some other gods and follows some other religion using these same methods on you. How would that poking, prodding, and coercion make you feel? Can you see how their attempts to convert you make them seem like a predator? Can you see how this experience makes you feel like prey? Can you see how your value seems to be diminished or absent in the eyes of those trying to convert you? Can you see how their value becomes tarnished in your eyes as they treat you like prey? Be happy to see me because you are happy to see me, because you value me for who I am. Don't be happy to see me because you have an opportunity to try to convert me. Don't be a predator. When I am happy to see you, it's because I'm happy to see you, because I value you as a person. I don't see you as prey. You are my family. You are my friend. You are a theist, but you are so much more. If you choose not to consider this statement, do not be surprised when your coercive gestures, however gentle or well-meaning you believe them to be, are met with my gentle wit and sarcasm. If you so choose to pressure your religion on me, do not expect me to remain silent. With honesty, dignity, and respect, Ryan Burkhart.
Oh, that's great.
And I
hear, hear.
Good message, man.
And I got that when I went to church. So, I don't know. I was getting pressured. Like, you're coming back for Easter, right? Kind of. It was gentle. It was well-meaning, I think, but totally misguided. I don't know. What do you guys think about any of that?
Yeah.
7 years of college down the drain.
I'm sorry. I had to do it. We're entertainers here, too. We got to have some humor, but I actually think that was great. That would be something. It would be great to print up on some nice card stock and send that out for in lieu of Christmas cards, you know, to your believers, friends and family, you know. I mean, it might piss them off a little bit.
I think, Fester, you were talking about that last week about, you know, when you were born again and trying to convert people, and that was the prime soul, you know, reason that you got any pleasure out of anything was trying to, you know, bring people into the church, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, it's all kind of, like I say, I mean, even beyond brainwashing, I mean, religion's, you know, a cult where, you know, you got to believe all the same things, and if you don't, you're not part of what they're all a part of, and those other people that believe something entirely different than the other huge group of people, they're not a part of it, and they're not right, and, you know, it'll never be solved because the basic answer to it all, man, the simplest answer to why things are happening the way they are on the earth is there's no God. You know, the pain, the everything that hardships that people go through, I mean, in the end, it's you got this one hand of all this theocratic philosophies of a greater being, and they love, he loves his children, but he's going to let them kill themselves and torture each other and rape each other, you know. In the simplest, the Occam's razor, you know, whatever's the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. That's it. It's not all of this convoluted, nebulous, my God's better than yours, you know, their conditional love, their I love you on one hand, but I'm going to let you die on the other. All of that is just, in the end, is obviously bullshit, because the basic, simplest answer to everything that's happening on the earth is there is no God. You know? I mean, you look
Correct.
Around and see the devastation going on and the suffering and the everything else. There is no God. There's no God that they explain to exist that would allow this to happen that's going on the face of the earth right now, you know?
Caller, can I get your name again? I already forgot. Was it Paul?
Ryan.
Caller? Ryan?
Ryan, yeah.
Ryan with the R?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Ryan. Yeah, were you previous to being an atheist, were you religious at all, Christian or anything, or?
I was brought up loosely Christian and got a little bit more intent in my early teen years. In my mid-teen years, I sort of leaned toward Wiccanism for a bit. And then in my early 20s, I really got heavy back into Christianity. I actually considered going to seminary for a while to become a pastor. I thought I was being called by God to
yep.
lead and counsel the flock. I started, you know, praying more and studying the Bible more, which is a key, and consulting, uh-huh. you know, pastors and all of these things a lot more. And I've only actually been a non-believer for, I guess it's been a little over 3 years now.
That's, yeah, about the same here. I'm just interested in asking because I've met so many different atheists on Facebook, and it's weird because a lot of people that are real, you seem like you have a lot of empathy towards kind of people that are proselytizing, and you seem to kind of have a, you know, how to deal with them pretty well, and, you know, not, you know, I mean, I'm not saying on the Facebook so much, but just the letter you wrote and stuff, it's kind of, you know, you can kind of deal with them in a more gentle manner. Then there's like other atheists that just, you know, they just, it's like just constant. I mean, they just, you're an idiot, you're a moron, you're stupid, you're retarded, you're
yeah.
believing in myths, and they just pound them, they just try to pound them down, and it's like, it's kind of weird, and those people sometimes have a real religious background, so it's just, I guess it's just, you're a good person or you're kind of a, you know, you're kind of coarse, you know, I don't know. Kind of
yeah, I can't remember. I don't know which of you guys said it earlier, but it's kind of on the lines that we've got to remember that, you know, like many atheists that are formerly religious, they are victims of religion. You know, I was a victim of religion, and these people who, you know, want to argue by throwing out a Bible verse, these people are victims
yeah.
of religion. Some of them are perpetrators as well. There's no doubt
yeah.
about that.
Yeah.
But they are also victims, and we have to keep that in mind. I think that's an important aspect to, you know, raising things to a higher level, you know, moving sort of the evolution of humanity, if you will, to the next step is really getting beyond the nonsense. And we can't very well do that, I don't think, by just being assholes to each other, you know.
Yeah.
Getting that level of understanding, like, yes, what I think you are saying right now, I know that to be bullshit. And here's
yeah.
why, but I'm still going
yep.
to give you some level of respect as a human being and
yeah.
explain to you why this is bullshit in the hopes that I can bring you out of it. Because, you know, I've been doing the Facebook page admin thing for a long time, and what I find is that if you're having a conversation with somebody and they're like, holy shit, you're right, religion is bullshit, which has happened several times,
yeah.
it's not that conversation that actually does the trick. there has been many other previous conversations that has planted these seeds along the way, that they are finally in this atmosphere that I provided, this conversational atmosphere that I provided, that finally was the last thing that kind of opened their eyes. But it was a bunch of other people planting seeds. And so we, as reasonable people, have to plant those seeds in the past, even if people are being total fucking dumbasses in trying to prove their point by, you know, quoting the Quran. You know, we have to be doing our best to, well, we don't have to be. I guess philosophically people could argue with that. But I would like to see more people trying to just, okay, you're not getting me right now, but let me do my best to give you some degree of respect and plant these seeds. Because in the hopes that they will come to fruition. I mean, for me as a Christian, I don't know if the guy was an atheist or whatever. This is probably, about 15 years ago or something. There was this guy protesting on the corner of the downtown in the city where I lived at the time, and I walked up to him and, you know, I said something Jesus-y to him, and he responded to me that, you know, religion is a means to control populations and what have you. And I told him, you know, you may not believe in God, but God believes in you. I walked away feeling so proud and clever, you know, which is just, you know, now I know it's a really nonsensical thing to say. But little did I know at the time, that guy planted a seed in my head that came, that was part of this coming to fruition, coming to a greater degree of reason, like a decade later, you know? So I'd like to see more reasonable people doing that.
I totally agree with that. That's the same thing. And my history and story was, you know, that's why I appreciate people that can kind of come from a perspective of coming out of religion, and especially like extreme, like born again or evangelical Pentecostal Christianity, where you're really, you know, coming from the, you were working in miracle powers and all that. When you can come out of that, you can talk to a lot of different levels of faith within Christianity, and you have more empathy for them. And you can kind of talk from your own experience and say, listen, I was where you're at 10 years ago, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. I was where you're at, and I'm going to talk to you, you know, civilly and say, look, here's what happened to me. And you just tell them. It's like reverse witnessing, you know, they call it witnessing. You're doing the same thing. Well, the same thing happened with me. My atheism probably started back in the 80s listening to George Carlin's comedy. I had all his comedy cassettes when I was young, you know, in my teenage years and even in my 20s. And even as a Christian, I became born again at 21. I still listen to George Carlin. And, you know, I even saw him live. And I'm like, after a while, you know, then you add Hitchens in on him, and you add the Zeitgeist documentary. You had all this stuff. It just keeps getting more and more and more. And then one day you wake up and you're like, it's like the blinders are pulled off your eyes. You're like, it's all bullshit. It's a giant, you know, people want to believe conspiracy theories. We talk about a lot of conspiracy theories on the show. That's the greatest conspiracy theory of all is worldwide faith-based religions. It's the historic conspiracy theory of all time. I mean, it's just, you know, and you finally wake up to it, and then you kind of look with a macro vision. You kind of see how everything connects, and things seem to, you know, they're better explained world events and stuff. You can kind of understand things better. You know, when you got those blinders of religion on and faith, you can't it's like you're living in a dream world or something. You're not really living. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Well, you know, absolutely. It justifies a lot of horrendous things that happen on the earth, you know. And a lot of people think that if they're religious, they, you know, go commit crime and you know, like we were saying earlier, be forgiven for it. And you put those blinders on because there's a lack of responsibility, I think, when you truly believe that all of your sins will be forgiven no matter what they are, as long as you believe in Jesus Christ as your Savior. You know, if I do that, then I can do whatever the fuck I want. I'll go on, you know, whatever, as long as I'm forgiven. I mean, you know, I think in a certain sense, and it goes every aspect of society and life, I think, even in terms of how people how some people look at poor people and how some people, you know, just plain treat other people sometimes, you know.
Yep.
And the, you know, a lot of them, I think, don't give a shit because they think in the end they'll be forgiven for all the nasty shit they've done in their life. You know?
Well, you know, some versions of Christianity and other religions absolutely teach that you basically receive your lot from God. And so if you're poor, it's almost like a karma thing. If you're poor, you deserve to be poor. If you're rich, you deserve to be rich.
Yep.
And I think that creates in many people a disincentive to help poor people, to help those in need. They say if they're poor, that's what God wants. He's teaching them a lesson, this, that, or the other. And
well, that
it creates a disincentive.
That comes from the whole Mother Teresa, that kind of suffering for Christ when she in her hospital in Calcutta or whatever. She, all the people are dying. Children are dying, and then they withhold the medicine and treatment from them. They say, in their suffering, Christ is glorified. It's a death and misery cult, basically, a blood cult. I mean, it's pretty sadistic, you know, a lot of the stuff that when you get religion warped in your mind like that, I mean, you just get all types of crazy. What does Hitchens say, Christopher Hitchens? He says you need religion to make a normally good person do something horrific or make a normally good person do bad things. I mean, it's true.
And it really makes all non-believers disposable to a certain extent. You know, Christian, Islamic, whatever. I mean, you don't believe what we believe. The Bible tells me, the Quran tells me, that you're going to hell anyway, so we shouldn't give a shit about you. You don't matter.
Yeah.
You know?
You might have been referring to the Steven Weinberg. He's a physicist. Steven Weinberg quote, which is, with or without religion, you would have good people doing good and bad people doing bad.
Right.
But for good people to do bad takes religion. And I think that's largely true.
Yep.
Maybe that
and it convinces people to do things they wouldn't normally do in terms of moral issues, you know.
And it's not just religion, by the way. There are a variety of different forms of indoctrination that take place on this planet.
Sure.
Some of them are political and patriotic and nationalistic and things like that. And so we have to, as reasonable people, kind of take a step back from religion sometimes and recognize that it's not just religion. Although religion is a source and a perpetrator of many of these ills in the world, what we're really battling is human nature when it comes down to it, our tendency to have magical thinking and to see patterns in nature that don't exist and, you know, be bigoted with in-group, out-group psychology and all of these things. This is really what we're battling. You know, religion just happens to be, at this point in history and through much of recorded history, one of the biggest, you know, perpetrators of ignorance and bigotry and violence and what have you.
Yeah.
So,
I still think it's both a
symptom as a cause. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I still think that, one of the most, if not the most insidious thing about religion is, you know, if you're not indoctrinated and have to take it on as a child onward or whatever, and you choose life or haven't been exposed to the life of religion and later on take it on, it always grabs you at your absolute rock bottom. You know,
yeah.
Religion just grabs you at your lowest point in your life, and that's the most insidious thing about it is, you know, people are desperate, they're looking for help with themselves or something to believe in, and there's that almighty leprechaun up in the sky, you know, telling them, if you believe in me, everything will be better.
Yeah, you know? It's once again this predatory nature of religions. I mean, in Christianity, it's the Great Commission, right? You know, go forth and make disciples of all nations. I mean, one of the central tenets taught in most of Christianity is a predatory tenet. You know, I think that's undeniable.
Well, you know, that's proselytizing, basically. You know, I mean, it's go out and increase the flock, you know?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God!
Some people take that to mean, you know, go out and murder people and burn witches and this,
yeah,
that, and the other, you know,
yeah,
enslave
right.
people, you know.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
You. Spread the word however you can.
Look what happened to the Native Americans in the United States, you know. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
So, anyways, gentlemen, I will get out of
yeah.
here. Thank you very, very much for giving me a little,
yeah, thanks for
a little time.
All right.
Great conversation.
No problem,
I'll
right?
check in with you guys.
Stop by
Peace.
Again sometime.
Yeah, no problem,
man.
Right?
Thanks for the call.
Yeah,
appreciate
call
it.
Back anytime,
right,
Ryan. Keep hammering those gods, all right?
Will do.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and
I think
there's so many people coming to those conclusions that it just doesn't, at a common sense, everyday level, it just doesn't make sense, man. The things religion expect you to believe to be true, it just is ridiculous, you know? I mean, I don't know, man. It's a difficult, thing to also deny, I think, once it's been there. And, you know, once you gain religion, I can't imagine. I guess
yeah.
with you, it was a gradual process, huh? It wasn't like an overnight thing.
No, it took. I mean, it probably started, you know, a few years after I received Christ as my Savior in '89. I think just a couple years later, it started chipping away. And I went to church on and off for like 10, 12 years. But I think about late 90s, like 99. And then when 2000 happened, and nothing happened, that was kind of the ripple that really started accelerating, getting out of it. And a few other incidents happened. You start getting exposed to more information. You get online, you get on the Internet. And like we talked about last week, they said the decline in religious belief is almost mirrors the rise of the Internet. It's like,
yeah.
you know, converts that. It's like that. It totally follows each other. So
I think it's the same thing, man. We're seeing things on the Internet, and they're like, man, this shit's not making sense. You're right. You know, they're seeing facts. And I think the Zeitgeist is a good example of it, of how basically they show that religion and devotion is to the Son of God, which the Son literally means S-U-N, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the 3 days of the 3 days of where the sun just stays in the sky and the resurrection, you know, and they're the first ones where I'd heard that all the similarities to previous gods, you know, they're the first ones where, you know, Horus is the same, or I don't know, I forgot which one it was, but the Egyptian god is the same as the Greek god, is the same as Jesus, you know, over and over and over, and it lasts thousands of years, you know. But,
yeah.
I think a lot of religious people fear, and that makes me wonder, I don't really fear about it, as religion recedes, which I think it will happen, is there going to be a vacuum left? I mean, what do you think, there's anything that will take its place in terms of overall belief?
I think there's always going to be people that are horrified of the unknown, and they're going to need something. That's the great unknown. What are people going to replace their faith in their, you know, mystical god or mythical
yeah.
god?
Yeah, what will take
it.
That
what,
hole in my
gonna,
heart? What will fill that hole in my heart if religion's not there?
Well, you know, my opinion, you know, there's always those alarmists, like a lot of them. I wanted to talk about Pastor John Hagee here in a minute, but there's the guys like him that will always say, you know, if atheism runs rampant, then we'll have no morals and people will just do whatever they want because there's no consequences, there's no punishment, there's no hell.
Right.
And I always say if people are going to kill, steal, you know, murder, rape, and rob or whatever, just do the most horrific crimes on the earth, if the only thing that's stopping them from doing that is thinking they may go to a mythical hell, or they believe in their mind they'll go to hell if they do that, then, I want them out front anyways. I want to know. I don't want them hiding behind that faith because that faith is so fragile. You know, and the moment they don't believe in it anymore, they're going to do whatever they want. So just get it out of the way, man. You know,
yeah.
you got thousands and millions of potential murderers and rapists and,
right.
you know, walking around, these people with no empathy, they're sociopaths, and the only thing that's keeping them from doing it is some religious training they had when they were young.
Yeah.
I say let them put all your chips on the table, man. Let's just like the old West, I don't care if we're going to arm ourselves to the teeth or whatever we got to do. I mean, let's get rid, you know, we got to euthanize, whatever we got to do. Get rid of
But you know what happened? I mean, you know what happened is as it goes away, I'm willing, you're going to see crime decrease as religion recedes. And you're seeing already, even, you know, I live in rural as BFE as hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's still, of course, a lot of churches and you know, religion is very strong in the area I believe. Yeah, that I live in. You know, but there are, even here, there are a lot of empty churches, man. I mean, you know, where they're built kind of out or even in some towns where they're not even being occupied and
yeah.
services aren't even taking place anymore. So even here it's happening, man.
Yep. That's the last call for the churches.
I want to go into crazy mode here, and this is kind of what my crazy path of thinking here, man. You know, I think as the show's been on for like 3 weeks now, you know, this is our third show, and I think about what I do believe in, not what I don't, but what do I do believe in, and I think one of the things, and maybe religious people are trying to explain it through the Bible or God or whatever, but I think that there's an unknown knowledge out there, man. I think there's a big one. I think the earth is round and not flat, or
yeah.
the earth revolves around the sun and not vice versa. I think that there's something out there, a basic premise of something that is out there, an unknown knowledge that will change our idea of what things are and how they work. And I personally feel like it's coming up. Like that, I read this a lot. Like there's so many changes, and all of mankind is in such a flux, you know. And they're, you know,
yeah.
and I, it just feels like there's something about to happen, you know, or there's something, and you know, of course, religious people, oh, that's the rapture, you know, no, not the fucking rapture. It's something that's verifiable by science. That yeah, we can look out in a telescope and see that we are revolving around the sun, or we can see that ship sailing off in the ocean and slowly disappear over the horizon and not just drop
mm-hmm.
off. You know,
yeah.
there's something I really feel, and this is the thing, man. I don't know. I mean, there's so many things out there, like the Bible, like the Sumerians were around about 4,000 BC, and this is here's my crazy thought pattern I'm going to go off on. I can't say I necessarily believe this, but there's something within it. And the Sumerians were the first. They were the first civilization that created writing. Even before the Egyptians, 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
They were the first written language, and they have these tablets, dude, that show in the writing. They actually have tablets that show like Pluto, and Pluto wasn't discovered until like the 1930s.
They couldn't know that.
Right, but it's in these
yeah.
tablets that they've written. It's in these clay tablets. And they've all been discovered in the last century and a half or so. And there was a bunch of them in the Berlin Museum. They're still there. But what they also talk about is that this is the crazy part. Here's my crazy thought. These tablets talk about a tenth planet. It's Planet X. And the Sumerians, who are the very first civilization to ever create writing, talk about it. And in the tablets show Pluto and other planets in our solar system that weren't discovered, obviously, until thousands of years later. But they describe a tenth planet in our solar system hidden beyond, I believe, I'm not sure how it works, but it's hidden in space where we're not able to identify it from Earth itself. Now, given that they already know Pluto, right? So they're talking about this 10th planet being out there. And on this 10th, from the 10th planet came this civilization called the Anunnaki. And all of this is in these tablets. I'm not making this shit up. They wrote it 4,000 years ago, and it's still on these tablets. And from this 10th planet, this Nibiru planet, came this civilization called the Anunnaki, and they landed on Earth and showed the Sumerians technology. And in these tablets, they even talk about genetic design on Earth by the Anunnaki. So, I mean, I'm not saying do I believe it? No, I don't believe it. Do I think it's possible? Maybe. I mean, they've written all these fucking, and the thing is that you got to take it as this, the Sumerian, look at the vast leap forward the Sumerians took. They're the very first civilization on the entire planet that created writing. Did it just happen upon them? You know, jump forward
to the Egyptian civilization.
In the Egyptian civilization, the oldest tomb that's known to be found, I'm sorry, the oldest pyramid that's known to be found that has hieroglyphics in it, it's along the Nile, south of Cairo. It's got hieroglyphics on the wall of flying vehicles. It's got a hell of clearly, dude. I mean, you could just search on Google for images, and they'll show pictures of it. It's got a helicopter. It's got a hovercraft. And it's got something that looks somewhat like a spaceship, all in one panel on hieroglyphics.
Uh-huh.
So, what I'm saying is it all true? I don't know. I mean, probably not, but maybe. And it was written by these people that obviously were advanced civilizations for their time. First, where did it come from? You know, where they suddenly invented language? And then the hieroglyphs showing flying vehicles. What the fuck, dude? There are stones in some of the pyramids in Egypt that are 5, 6, 10, 12 tons large, and they fit perfectly into other pieces of the pyramid. Now, back then, man, all they supposedly had were hand tools. How the fuck are you going to get these massive pieces that today, even modern today, I was watching a special on pyramids and shit, where modern cranes today have problems picking it up, man. They tip and shit. So even today, we're unable to pick up some of those fucking stones that were supposedly crafted by hand tools, 10, 12, 15 tons large, fitting exactly with other pieces of a pyramid or whatever else. It's crazy. So I think that there's some unknown knowledge, dude, that either was lost. I follow this guy. I don't know if you ever heard of him, Graham Hancock.
And yeah, I've watched a couple of his videos.
Yeah, he's really good. And he travels all over the world, man. He's done scuba dives and all these sunken civilizations in the ocean
now. Yeah, he was looking for Atlantis. Didn't he have the theory that Atlantis existed before all of the civilizations we knew, and they were
way more advanced? Yeah.
And it was
flooded somewhere. I don't think he's identified this is where Atlantis was at. But he believes that there was an Atlantis. I mean, even like, I guess Plato wrote about it and shit. Like the Greeks wrote about Atlantis. And he believes through some of these places, he's trying to rewrite history into saying like some of the stone edifices, the buildings and shit that they're finding now are way older than modern day archaeologists are saying they are. Like 50,000, 60,000 years old. There's this place in Turkey called Göbekli Tepe that they've just found, and they've identified it as being like 20,000, or it was like, 10,000 years before the Egyptians. You know, I should have the dates in front of me talking about this, but I kind of got off on a tangent. But, so he believes, and this is kind of my flow of where things are at, is there was civilizations on this earth that had technology. They knew some shit. They knew how to do things that we don't know how to do today. And that shit has gone away, and maybe eventually we'll rediscover it somehow. You know, I don't know. And I think maybe part of rediscovering that is the fucking earth is round. You know, boom, one of those big ones, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just like the pyramids and the Easter Island statues and all that, how they all line up together and everything. It's just in the Mayan temples, and they're all coordinated. It's like, how the hell did that all happen?
A line you can circle around the earth that connects all that shit together. Did you see lately about the fucking Easter Island statues? You know how they just showed the heads? Well, some dude just lately in the last, I think, few months thought about digging around one of them and found that they're fucking buried bodies. I mean, not real bodies, but stone bodies. So it's an actual figure that's buried, you know, and they're massive, you know, and half of them are fucking buried up to their neck. All of them are.
They
still have not been able to figure out how the fuck they got those, you know, there in the first place.
What is it, man?
You know,
I know, it's maddening.
Where is it, dude? How did that happen? And it's, I think the shit that they're saying today is bullshit about, they rolled them up on logs and fucking put them in place with, what the fuck, dude? You know, it's going back to, it's crazy, man, what they're trying to tell, how the pyramids were built and shit.
They floated them. They floated stuff.
Right.
And they're like, oh, come on.
But 10-ton blocks of fucking sandstone or whatever,
You're sawing through 100-ton blocks of stone.
You're right. No, it's more like tap, 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 tap. You know, it's a fucking hand tool.
Chisel.
You know, they're like tapping at a rock until it becomes perfectly exactly square, a 10-ton block.
Like a micrometer.
Right. There's this face on the Nile somewhere, too, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's a massive boulder. It's just gigantic, and it's carved out, and the thing is the face of it. It's like 10, 12 feet tall and 10, 12 feet wide. I mean, it may be bigger. It's just massive. And the face that's carved into it is perfectly smooth. I mean, and not only that, it's perfectly symmetrical. It's exactly the same that if you put a line right down the middle of that face, every single measurement of the eyes, of the nose, of the mouth is exactly the same on each half of it. If somebody's fucking doing that with hand tools? Shit.
Yeah.
You know?
That was, how they did it.
I don't know,
man.
I think a lot of these people, I think a lot of religious people are like, all of this unknown stuff, it's God. It's just God.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about it. It's just God, But I
quit praying on me, would
you? I still think, man, there's some sort of unknown knowledge. Some massive thing that's going to, I don't know if it's going to pop on everybody at once or dawn on everybody, but I don't know. It just feels like it, you know?
Well, I don't think, you just watch this show Cosmos. I mean, I missed last Sunday's episode. It's taped or whatever. I have to watch it, but I've watched all those episodes. And when you see the vastness of the universe and just all the possibilities of alternate universes and just even just the galaxies, just the billions upon billions of galaxies, and how massive everything is, and the probabilities of, probably billions of other planets that can have life that are close to a star as we are. I mean, the odds of there not being intelligent life out there is just, like, infinitesimal. It has to be. I mean, it just has to be. And I'm not saying they're walking among us, but, I mean, it has to be. And I don't even think
at this point, it's ridiculous to think otherwise.
I think
just by sheer chance, somewhere there's got to be other life, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think even
there's so much shit we don't understand, but it's all, scientific. It's not God's will. It's there may be fucking wormholes out there or something, or there may, that's been theorized by physicists, and even Einstein talked about wormholes and time travel and shit like that, so it's not beyond the realm of even possibility. Maybe we just haven't discovered it.
Did you see that
there's fucking wormholes in space, man, science is going to do it, though, man. It'll be science that uncovers the shit that it's a new dawn, I think, for mankind. if we're still around, you know.
I'm completely operational, and all my circuits are functioning perfectly.
Wow! I feel good!
That first part is from 2001, isn't it? Where he's,
yeah,
that's Hal.
Yeah.
Isn't that the Hal computer?
Yeah. Did you see that story? It was on Facebook. It was one of the humor. It was a crank news Facebook site. But the guy said they arrested Sweden police arrested a man that said he was from the future and he time traveled back to stop the Hadron Collider from exploding. Something they were going to do. And I was reading it and I didn't realize it was a joke at first. I'm like reading it. And I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, oh my God. And they're like, the way they wrote it, it made it seem real realistic. They're like, obviously the guy's crazy or whatever, but he was wearing strange clothes and he spoke with a weird accent and he was like, he didn't look like anything that from this world. And it was like, I'm just like reading it and I'm like, no. And then I kind of did a little, I read some of the comments and they're like, it's obviously a crank site. I'm like,
it was
laughing,
because it made its round on the internet, dude. I mean, it was on several sites. It was. I saw the date. It was first published in like 2010. So
I didn't look at it on. Yeah, I didn't see it on Snopes or anything. I didn't look for it, but I don't know. I saw it
on several sites. The weirdest part about that, it was. I just read it, and it was just an off, news site somewhere, but it was the very last paragraph or last line in the whole story about the dude. It was that didn't even trip me out. I was thinking, oh, that's just some crazy dude, or he's delusional, whatever. The very last paragraph in it, which maybe now that you say that, it's the Onion that did, but it says he, and then at the end when they went back to recover him and do question him further, he had disappeared from his cell. Did you see that? They're claiming the fucker disappeared from his cell, and they don't. He's gone.
Oh, jeez.
That was the last paragraph in that story that I read about that guy. So who knows, man?
He vaporized. That's crazy.
That was the one that tweaked me. I'm just thinking, whatever, man. He could just be, be dysfunctional, schizophrenic, whatever. And then the last paragraph, he just disappeared from his cell. Gone now.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I want to switch topics. Or you got more on that? Or
No, go ahead, man. What do you got?
You going to say anything else about the I don't know where else we can go from there on that one. I will add one thing. I think one thing they are kind of figuring out that could be a huge discovery is just the Higgs-Boson, the unified field, and how everything seems to be interconnected, and the energy field, just kind of permeates everything, and everything affects everything. I think they're kind of proving that now. So that could be, that could be a pretty big, just if you sit there and you have a bad attitude and you think negative thoughts, you can, like, kill plants around you.
Or create disease in your body or shit,
You eat a steak from a cow that was killed really when it was at its heightened fear state, and the meat somehow is poisoned in a weird way, has bad energy in it, and you're eating that and it's not good for you. All that stuff is kind of, I think they're starting to discover that, and I kind of believe that's the way it's going to go with that. They're going to find more and more and more out about that, and they're going to start, figuring out the way to heal people and do things differently because of these discoveries. So
that's another one of the basics for me. I feel everything is interconnected, and again, it goes back to science at a molecular level, man. As my ass is sitting on this chair, the atoms of my ass and my shorts are intermingling with the chair, and the chair is intermingling with the fucking floor, and the floor is so at a subatomic level, man, everything flows. Particles fucking flow through everything, and it is all connected, especially living organisms, man. They're dependent upon each other, and we're as dependent upon animals and the earth as the earth is on us, man, more so, for sure. And, we're fucking it up, man. We're messing up the earth big time, and You know,
I agree.
At some point,
that's
hopefully
all I have
it doesn't
to say about that.
Point.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
I'm gonna. I totally agree with you on that. Well, I was gonna flip the subject. We got not to get back on religion again, but we got Easter coming up this Sunday, and what happened early this week is I saw one of the our famous fundamental preachers, John Hagee, basically predicting the end of the world for next April 2015. I don't know if you saw any of that with his whole thing about the four blood moons. We had a blood moon the other day, and there's going to be another blood moon, and then there's another one in September, October, and then there's an eclipse in the middle of that, and then there's another one next April 15th. And I guess he was having a preaching service on it last night. I didn't get to see that. I watched an old video of him talking. I can only take a few minutes of it, and I have to shut it off. But he's basically saying it looks like he's trying to insinuate the end of the world is going to be next April.
Motherfucker's talking about astrology, dude. He's using astrological signs to fucking predict the end of the world.
Well, he said that God. He said the stars and the planets are God's. They're his road signs, his billboard. And he's screaming at us that he's coming back, and nobody's listening. So that's what he's doing. And I was like, and I'm sitting there thinking, can't we just have, I'm really a hypocrite when it comes to this, but. And I'll tell everybody, it isn't like we got thousands of listeners or anything, so I can say this, but I celebrate pretty much all religious holidays to some extent or another. I celebrate Christmas. I try to do it on more of a winter solstice feel. I don't go around handing out tracts or having nativity scenes or anything like that, but I celebrate with my family. We give gifts. We have a Christmas tree, blah, blah, blah. I feel a little hypocritical doing it kind of sometimes, but, and I celebrate Easter, basically. I just go to family and have dinner. I'll have a dinner with family and stuff, and I just kind of stay quiet these last few years. I just kind of, when religious topics come up, I just kind of pipe down a little bit and don't really talk much about it. But, I don't even know where I'm going with this now, but basically what I'm trying to say is I'm kind of hypocritical on that, but
I mean, part of it is it's tradition, bro. Christmas has been celebrated for 2,000 years or so, and a lot of it's just tradition, man, and it doesn't mean you have to believe in Jesus to give a few gifts around December, or eat ham on Easter or whatever else, It's just tradition, man. I know religion is the reason that it's occurred for years, but look at Halloween, dude. You still celebrate Halloween, right? And you're not like a Wiccan or anything, or agnostic or whatever.
I'm wrapping up coins and putting them underneath the welcome mat, and I'm doing all that kind of stuff. Basically the point I was getting at was, my family and a lot of are believers, and they celebrate these religious holidays. And even these guys are such jackasses, these big-time preachers of these mega churches, they can't even let the believers enjoy these holidays. They got to make it out to be the end of the fucking world. And, it just drives me nuts. It's like, they can't celebrate, they're trying to have happy thoughts, we're going to go to heaven, we're going to be able to go to heaven because Jesus died for our sins. And it can't just leave it at that. It's got to be some signal, for the end times and
everything's got to be a sign. Everything's a biblical sign. Everything. It just can't be that it's occurred through the progress of time. One thing after another builds up to the point that this thing occurred, Hey, all these fucking blood moons and shit, man. I mean, he's as bad, that Hagee is as bad as the Mayans or whatever. He might as well be out on a fucking pyramid sacrificing people to the moon god,
I think he wants
non-believers, man. We'd be the ones up there. He'd be pulling our hearts out, still beating hearts out of our chests and shit, and, all the Christians.
I want you to kill every golfer on the course.
But if I kill all the golfers, they're going to laugh me if you throw away the key.
You gotta love Bill Murray, man. But it's like they constantly bring us back to the Stone Age. It's just, You can't you can't just have a good time without Pastor Hagee or one of these Jerry Falwell or Robertson or something getting on there on their in front of their gold altars and saying, you know, basically
hasta la vista, baby.
Well, I tell you what, dude, my stepdad, I wasn't real close to him. He died a few years back, and he kept getting sicker and sicker and had diabetes, and they kept, you know, chopping off pieces of his body and shit as it went along, and it was nasty. He suffered pretty fucking bad for the last few years of his life, and he didn't really believe in God. I'm pretty sure he didn't. I didn't have a real talk with my mom, but my mom is highly religious. She's a Seventh-day Adventist. So we went, of course, it happened in their church, you know, the funeral occurred in their church, took place. And the one thing I got of it, I knew he wasn't very religious at all. And that fucking pastor was up there using his death and that funeral opportunity to fucking recruit people into religion. I'm like, motherfucker. Instead of giving this dude a view about suffering for years, you know, and fucking fighting through and trying to survive, it's turned into a fucking recruiting session for religion, man. Yep. That is funeral.
I've been to funerals like that at all different, even Catholic ones. Sometimes they do it a little bit, but not as bad usually. But I've been to a lot of fundamentalist and Pentecostal funerals, and they turn it into a salvation message.
Man,
it just now. At the time, it didn't bother me, but now I'm just like, "Are you kidding me?" It's like,
yeah, that's how I took it when I went. You know, by the time I went down there, I was in the frame of mind when I flew down to his funeral. It took place in Houston. I had to go down there, and that's where my mom lives. But you know, I was pretty firmly situated in the atheist realm of thinking. You know, and that really it went bing. You know, just hit a note in me. As soon as he started talking about it, I was thinking, stop talking about your fucking fake God and religion and get back to the reason we're all here, the dude in the coffin, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. He's right behind the dude, and he's not, you know, he talked more about recruiting into the religion almost than he did of my stepdad. And I'm just like, man, that is just insidious.
Miserable.
Yeah.
You don't know how people can live with themselves that do this stuff. It's absolutely asinine. I've been to I think I've been to about four funerals since I've been an atheist, and two of them were absolutely. I just shook my head through them. I couldn't believe how I was just like people are like looking at me, and I'm just furious, just sitting there. You know, I'm like I can't believe it, man. I just want to, you know, I'm having fantasies in my mind that I jump up on by the altar and just start off on them.
Just be like, wake up, people. Wake the fuck up, you know. Hey, you know, for a lot of people, too, man, it's an excuse not to live their lives, man. It's the excuse that, you know, everything's going to be better in the afterlife anyway, so this life doesn't matter. You know, man, that's messed up. Life certainly is fucking precious. I mean, I don't think there's any argument for anybody about that. And it's fragile. And, man, you got to live it while you got it, because it ain't going to be around long, you know.
I agree.
I mean, don't live it to be, you know, to fucking sit around and think that going to church is the only thing that needs to happen in your life, you know.
We need more of this.
Down a beer? 7 o'clock in the morning. Scotch?
I love that one.
Yeah, I know.
I'm drinking some beer in Nevada right now.
Yeah. I'm just drinking vanilla chai tea. I'm really teetotaling it tonight. I'm kind of wimping out. I got a long drive ahead of me tomorrow. I'm leaving, going out east, so. On the road for like 10, 11 hours. So I'm just, I kind of tore it up a little bit on my birthday last show on Wednesday. I had quite a few beers during the show and continued on drinking. And then I broke into my birthday bourbon that Morticia had got me. And I put down about 2/3 of that bottle through the night. And it was a mess. So I was like, I kind of, I kind of swore off the Wednesday night drinking after the show.
Drinking.
So at least for this week.
I usually try to cut it off about two, maybe three. It depends on how I'm feeling, but I'll have at least one, man. I usually start the show off with a beer, a fresh beer, and sucking down as we're talking about things. It makes it refreshing.
I'll probably do that next week.
Yep.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
I don't know about heavily, but
yep.
I'm definitely doing that.
That's what I was doing last week. I was a little rough on Thursday.
Yeah.
I get to the point now, I just turned 46, and I don't recover like I used to, you know. Usually I get one tied on like that, the next day I don't feel good, and then the second day I don't feel, you know, completely normal either sometimes. So
me too.
Like,
that's how I
got to kind of watch it.
Especially with the liquor. Beer, I'm not bad. I can drink a lot of beer still. It doesn't bother me too much. I start throwing in the whiskey, which I like. You know, I like the Knob's Creek and the Jack Daniels on occasion. And you add that to the mix, and it ends up being trouble the next day, man. Feeling rough.
In
the 20s, man, you could get up, you know. You'd feel like shit, but you just go out, you know, go to Taco Bell, eat a little Taco Bell, drink some Mountain Dew, and you feel better, you know. It's perfect for a hangover, but... You know, fuck, man. You're 40s. It's like
normally
a time.
If I just drink normal beer, like a Bud Light or just kind of a normal beer, and I can have bourbon with it, like just regular bourbon, and I'm fine. But when I was drinking those raspberry Abita beers, and they were real fruity, and I was drinking those, and I mixed them with two different kinds of bourbon, and I drank the birthday bourbon, and I was drinking Bullet bourbon. I finished that bottle off and tapped into the birthday bourbon. Oh, it was just too much. Mixture of different things was the problem, I think.
Yeah, Bullet's not bad. I got sick on Bullet one time a while back when I was drinking with my cousin.
Yeah.
I don't drink it anymore. That seems to be if I get sick on something, I'm pretty much done with it after that point. So.
Yeah.
No. Tequila's that way, man. I got sick early on in that in high school once, and I always shy from that shit. I can't do shots of tequila, man. I can barely stand the smell of that. I can drink it margaritas.
Yeah.
Margarita's not bad. I'm having a foo-foo, but that's about it for tequila, man.
Yeah.
I can't do shots.
Yeah, I like margaritas.
Tequila. My shot of preference for quite a long time when I was in my 20s was Jägermeister. And that fucking knocks me out nowadays, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a fucking right hook from Tyson in the first round after a while, man.
Yeah, yeah. I can't do that.
Danger, danger.
I get stupid when I drank a shot of Jaeger at my buddy's divorce party at a adult establishment, and I threw the shot down and was sitting right at the bar with everybody around me. I think I threw up in my mouth. I like catch it and I'm trying to swallow it down right in front of everybody. A whole big mouthful of vomit. It was just horrible. And I was like, after that,
let it go all over everybody.
I couldn't do it. It was burning so bad. It was horrible. But, you know, we're in there, and he's got, like, cake, and, I'm drinking vodka, and I'm drinking Jaeger, I'm drinking bourbon, I'm drinking Jack Daniels, I'm drinking beers, I'm drinking fruity drinks, I'm drinking everything. And I just got,
disaster.
Like 10, 12 years ago, and just doing stupid stuff. But it was it was rough. That Jaeger, but ever since then, I'm like, Jaeger, I can't even smell it. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, me too. It's something I can't remember getting sick. I'm sure I probably did at least once when I was drinking it. But it wasn't any particular thing. But now, man, smelling it, it's just like got such a heavy syrupy smell to it nowadays. And I don't know if they changed it or what, but I can't even. I don't go close to the Jaeger. I usually stick with whiskeys, man. I like drinking whiskey. I like sipping whiskey. I'm not a shot, but I can pour like five in front of me and, you know, sip on them all night long and I won't get too bad.
That's
and,
what
you know,
I do. Sip good.
Yeah.
Fine sipping bourbon is what I like. Real nice. A real nice bourbon. That's that's what I like, you know, but you know,
not
you just got
to good.
You got to take it. Sometimes I use it as a liniment, you know. but that's what Morticia always says. She says, like, are you using it as a liniment? I'm like, yeah. But you know, you get I used to do bricklaying, and you know, back would be all sore, my knees would be sore. Come home, have a couple, you know, three fingers tall glasses of you know, Maker's Mark or whatever, Bullet bourbon or something, and or you know, the one that was good was the Knob Creek. The single barrel was like 120 proof. That is really,
yeah.
You could just drink one of those, like, you know, a nice rock glass, about three quarters full on some nice ice. And I just drink one of those. I'd go to bed and just be totally pain free, you know, not even really have, you know, just be fine. But,
yep. You know, that's where I was like, when I come back from a day like that, man, I usually smoke it up a little bit, man. It always helps the aches and pains for me. That
yeah.
You know, it was always a good reliever of the stress.
Oh yeah.
Yahoo!
Yeah. I'm waiting for it to become legalized, dude. It's happening slowly but surely.
Yeah.
I never thought in my lifetime. I mean, because you know, when I was in college, dude. I mean, I'm not gonna say that, but. You know, I never in my lifetime. What's that?
I said, go ahead, tell everybody.
Yeah, right.
7 years of college down the drain.
That's about right, too, man. That's about how long it took me. I took some time off in between, and I was I definitely had some fun in between before I went back and finished school. But, you know, but even back then, dude, when I was, you know, doing things I probably shouldn't have and you know, but I never, ever in my deepest imagination would have ever thought that would have become legal in our lifetime. I thought it would have eventually, but just it was, you know, the Reagan era and, you know, just saying
no, Reagan. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then the Bushes weren't any better. And, you know, even Clinton was, you know, he's smoking weed and. You know, I mean, look at Clinton, George W., and now Obama have all admitted to smoking weed, and it's already a known fact that both W. and Obama have done much more than that. I mean, Obama admitted it in his book, and
cold.
So did Bush. You know, they're snorting it up. They were, you know, doing all kinds of things, man, LSD, and you know.
I don't know about that. I haven't heard that one. Where'd you
George
that?
W., dude, he had one of his friends record him. It's out. There's an MP3 out there. Search for it.
Really?
And he recorded him secretly talking about his previous drug use, and they were talking about making it public. And W. saying, he says, I don't know how that would help anybody to tell anybody that I took acid when I was in college. And it's one of his best friends that obviously they no longer talk. It was one of his best friends, and they had a record of it. It's out there, but he's admitted it. You know, I mean, he snorted it out, and you know, Obama, the same thing. He's admitted doing heavy drugs. You know, so at some point, it's like even these fuckers that have done this have made it to be president, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't fucking destroy you. It doesn't, you know, some people maybe that don't have the self-control over it, but, it, you know, for a lot of people it doesn't destroy it. And in fact, the last two that, you know, that have snorted cocaine have made it to the presidency, you know. So,
yep.
I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's just, you know, like anything else, man, it's all in moderation, you know, including moderation.
Yeah.
Every once in a while you got to go on a bender, but.
Yeah, that's true.
No, you're doing it all wrong.
Yeah, I'm for total legalization of everything. I'm even for hard drugs and everything. Just the way I'm just all these nonviolent criminals that are just basically drug users that are in prison. It's just all a bunch of bullshit. Now, if they make cannabis, marijuana, whatever legal. If it ever becomes legal federally, are they going to release all these guys that are in prison on marijuana trafficking charges and stuff?
They're going to have to, you'd think. You know, Colorado's already looking at that. They're considering
releasing the prisoners that are for marijuana drug offenses?
Yep, for marijuana-only drug offenses. And you got to think that's going to happen somewhere. I mean, look at all these fuckers in Colorado in prison while the people standing right outside the goddamn gates are smoking weed, you know, and they're looking out behind bars fucking going, I'm in prison for that, and you're fucking, you know,
yeah,
right outside the gates smoking a big hoofer, man, you know.
Man.
That's got to be a bitch for those people. You
would
think that they'd be suing the shit out of them trying to get out of prison. I imagine that probably the ACLU and whoever else is involved, but they have been talking about it. So I don't know if it, you know, it'll just be a mass see you later or whatever. But I imagine that's got to come eventually. But I think in general, I agree with you. If they legalize everything, all they got to do, just like any other drug that's out there already, and there's some wicked pharmaceutical drugs, you know, I mean, Dilaudid and Oxycontin, you know, list goes on and on, you know, but all you got to do is the same as how those occur, is if there's someone that's addicted to cocaine or maybe needs it for whatever, you know, or, you know, now they're looking at psychedelics as therapeutics for post-traumatic stress syndrome and, end-of-life people, the cancer that are about to die, they're giving these people mushrooms. Now the federal government's allowing them to experiment with them, and they're getting a calm and an acceptance about their death instead of being terrorized about it. And so, you know, all that shit's coming around. But, you know, all they got to do is legalize everything, and if you need something, get a fucking prescription from your doctor. And go pick it up at a pharmaceutical or a shop that specializes in it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Just like anything else, man. Just like they're doing with marijuana.
Yeah.
If you need it, go get a fucking prescription for it. And that way they know that you're on it. You're not doing some fucking back alley deal where you got a chance of getting a bullet in the fucking head for something.
Well, they've already scientifically proved that the cannabinoids they went through when they boil down the cannabis or whatever that they get, not the hemp oil, but the concentrated cannabinoids, they put them in capsules and stuff, and people take them, and they kill tumors. They've proven it kills cancer. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's the same thing with the Monsanto fighting the small farms that want to be organic and don't want to use pesticides and GMOs, and they want to use, you know, heirloom seeds and all that. They're just trying to destroy all that stuff to get rid of them so they don't have no competition. They can just take over everything. It's the same thing with the pharmaceutical companies and the medical, you know, industry.
Yep.
They don't want people curing cancer. They don't want people curing cancer with something they can't sell.
Right.
You know?
That's exactly what it's about, is the money. That's the reason why weed is illegal and a lot of other substances, any other that are quote unquote illegal right now. I mean, it's because of the money. It would replace some sector of the pharmaceutical industry. You know, if
it
was legalized.
A lot.
Right.
It would replace a lot.
And marijuana especially. But you see even these little kids that have had seizures, these massive seizures, and they're starting to be given weed through concentrate. I don't think they're smoking it, but they're giving to them in oils and whatever else. And their seizures are being reduced. And there are people with kids that have autism and these other diseases that cause them to have. See, there's this one girl that she had like 100 seizures like a day sometimes. I mean, that was all she was doing and was close to death on numerous occasions. They couldn't stop it, and they gave her cannabis, and it reduced them down to almost zero. That's the reason, like, Chris Christie signed the bill to legalize it in New Jersey. There was a couple out there that had a daughter that was like 6 years old, and they appealed to him directly at like some press conference or something and said, please don't let my daughter die. Please legalize it for medicinal use. She has these convulsions that almost kill her regularly, except when she's on marijuana. And he did legalize it medicinally, specifically because of that couple and their testimony with their daughter. But having these medical refugees move to Colorado now. Because of their kid, you know, it's actually showing medicinal uses, applications in areas they never knew of before. You know, it's amazing.
Shit. I'll tell you what, I'll roll around on the floor and foam at the mouth if I can get a prescription.
Heck yeah. Eventually, we won't even need that, dude. It'll be legal. It'll be right. It'll grow some in our fucking backyards, dude.
I think I said in the last show or the first show that Detroit, within the city limits, in a residence, you're allowed up to an ounce for personal use in your home. You can have it in your home. Now, I don't know how you're supposed to get it there.
Right.
I don't think it's legal to have it in your car driving.
Uh-huh.
You can't send it through the mail, so I don't know how the heck we get it here, but you can get it. So,
that still gives
the
cops the excuse to be able to, you know, pull you over and arrest you for it whenever they want still, you know, whenever they feel like it, when they're behind in their quotas, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, eventually I believe I just read Maryland was the latest. They not only legalized it medicinally, but I think they're talking about decriminalizing it. You know, where it's not legal, but they don't charge you for it, and it's like a minor offense if they find it on you. You know, you don't get arrested for it. It's a ticket, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's happening. Maryland is not a liberal state by any means, man. That's a conservative as hell state. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
My sister lives out there. I've been out there quite a few times. And, in fact, she... I'll say that for another time, maybe. I don't really want to tell that story right now either.
I think it's just heading that way more and more every year. So, you know, our children are going to, you know, reap the benefits of that more than probably us. But we might get it a little bit towards the end. We might be able to, you know, smoke down or, you know, take cannabis oil or whatever if we're dying or in pain or whatever. You know, we got that going for us.
Well, I tell you what, for me personally, man, I really pain relievers don't work on me. Aspirin doesn't work so much. I mean, maybe on occasion, and what's a low level pain reliever? Those just fucking knock me out, man. They just put me to sleep. They don't really even relieve the pain, you know. I'm thinking Vicodin. Is that right? I think Vicodin. Low-level pain reliever. Yeah, I mean, and even that shit just knocks me out. So
it's
one
so
of the few things that
too.
Relieves pain, aches and pains on me, man.
Anytime I ever took a Vicodin, I would start sweating. It would make me sweat.
Really?
You know that can't be good for you if you start sweating after a half hour after you take a
right.
pill. You know, just sitting there, you know, you're not even in a hot area and start sweating. It's like it can't be good for you.
Yeah, almost without fail of me, I'm asleep in about 20 minutes after taking a Vicodin. It just died, you know, it's like
usually,
fucking sleeping pill.
Yeah, usually they make people, they pep you up. They usually, even though it's a kind of a, I guess it's a narcotic, I guess, considered, but a lot of people get hyped up from them. They'll take them, they'll drink with them, which is really bad because they got the acetaminophen in them, which eats your liver. But they'll drink with them, and they'll take a couple, two, three of them, and it'll hype them up, you know, and they'll get... You know, you kind of come down hard later, but there's like a short time period, maybe an hour or so, where you're real hyped up. So a lot of people do that. I've seen.
Huh. Yeah, not me.
That's rough.
Isn't that a daisy?
But it'll be good to see, man. On top of it, as they legalize it, the other massive repercussion of legalizing weed. Is it will reduce the police forces, across the
country. Oh, yeah.
They won't have such a need for the fucking DEA, and federally, local police forces, all of this justification, this drug war bullshit that's been going on for decades. Billions going into fucking fighting. Fuck, dude, we had AWACS flying over the border before the immigration deal was such a huge issue, trying to stop drug dealers, you know? Fucking Air Force radar planes trying to stop drug dealers.
Yeah.
You know, and the other massive one on top of it, if that shit's legalized, you'll see a whole lot less fucking of what's going on in Mexico. Because all of those killings, the fucking drug cartels, all of that is happening because of American drug policy. Because all that shit goes into the U.S., you know. I mean, it's fucking it's because of U.S. demand for drugs that all that shit's going on in Mexico right now. So, I mean, it'd be just worldwide. But, you know, the U.N. is fucking fighting it. They've got an established drug policy against marijuana, and they're trying to push the U.S. into enforcing and stopping legalization of weed.
Yeah. And then if Mexico don't have the guns to kill each other, we'll send them to them.
Right.
Yeah, that whole controversy was going on for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's just overall, I think it's just better in so many ways. You know, just get the prison population down. I think there's a lot of people are shining the light on the whole shame of the United States prison population and how we just keep building more and more prisons and just keep putting people away over just minor nonviolent. That's my whole thing. If you kick somebody's door in and you shoot them or you threaten them with a gun and you steal their stuff or you go rob a bank or with a firearm or you rape somebody or you beat the shit out of somebody to almost dead or put those people away. But I mean, some jack off driving around with a roach in his ashtray. You know, do we really need to put him in jail or it's just stupid.
I'll tell you what, dude, I won't mention my name, but someone I know got arrested for, he went over to Canada and he had a joint on him and came back across the border stuffed it, crotched it, and got pulled over and searched, and they found it. And he got charged for smuggling across an international border for one joint and could have spent fucking 20 years in jail. And I was talking with him last summer, and he goes, I tell you what, man, he goes, I'm lucky I'm not a black dude. He goes, because if I was a black dude, I'd probably be in prison, and my life would be a whole lot different than how it is right now, than us two sitting here talking. As you know, he had a couple court dates. He ended up not serving any time or anything being charged against him. But while in his court dates, there are other defendants there for similar charges and whatever else, and they were all going to jail, man, and they were mainly black dudes. They were African Americans. And my cousin said they were, the judge was like, left and right, 5 years, 10 years, 15. And he goes, I'm lucky I'm not a black dude because I'd be in prison right now if I was.
Yeah.
So it tells you how fucked up the prison system is.
Yep, that would be definitely the clincher right there. I mean, going to jail for 20 years for one joint, that's just insane.
Yeah.
He's probably going over there to just friggin' have some fun and play in the field or something.
All right. The drinking age was 19 over there. I don't know if that's changed, but when you're in college years, you go over there and drink legally and hang out and have fun at a bar or whatever. And he came back across and fucking, one joint is smuggling across the international, like he had fucking 20 pounds of opium on him or something, bring him back from Afghanistan, crazy shit.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, we're done here, huh?
We're going to get a couple minutes, but we're going to start winding it on down. We've got about 2.5 minutes. But, looking forward to keep doing it. Old DB, and I'm your host, Uncle Fester, and we're having a good time and talking about a lot of different things, a lot of different serious issues. And we talk about partying, drinking, drug laws, prison systems, the Bundy Ranch situation, a lot of religious stuff, the apocalypse. It's upon us, apparently, according to John Hagee. So talking about all these different things, man, it's fun. Like I said, the first episode we had, it was just, a lot of this is like therapy for me, and I think it is for you too, just to get out of here and do a lot of stuff and get stuff off our chest, and, just be able to talk about shit that's going on around the world and this country and stuff, and have this format. This is really a fun thing. It's really cool. I really enjoy it. Next week, I think we'll have some different stuff that's going on that we'll be able to talk about that. That'll be really interesting.
Well, we've lived in some crazy times right now, so I think there's not there's plenty of shit to talk about every week, man. There's always crazy shit going on. So I do too. I dig hanging out. This is time well spent for me, and you know, appreciate being able to hang with you, talk about whatever we talk about. And it's a good deal, man. Hopefully we'll get some listeners along the way. Dude, we need to do a better job of doing like a station ID and phone number deal.
We gotta get the phone number out.
Yeah.
I put it out on different sites and stuff in our link and stuff, but we'll do more of it before next week. So, all
right,
we'll be
in the show too, you know.
Yep. All right, we'll see you next week, and we'll see you next Wednesday, 7 to 9.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Yeah.